From beautiful downtown Sacramento, it's time for Beach Blanket Fort Bingo!
Beach Blanket Fort Bingo! Beach Blanket, Beach Blanket Fort Bingo, Fort Bingo. Spouse's got a show when you really want to know what's going on. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beach Blanket, Beach Blanket Fort Bingo, Fort Bingo. Our music gonna leave you and your favorite comics too. Grab a spot and settle in, cause it's high time we begin. Beach Blanket Fort Bingo.
Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to Beach Blanket Fort Bingo! My name is Spaz. I appreciate you hanging out with me in the blanket fort for a little while. You are going to be able to sit back and relax and listen to a discussion that I had with John Rubin and Tommy Dunbar of the Rubinoos. Now, we don't discuss the band's whole career. That would take about 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 days worth of interviews, but we are going to discuss the brand new album called From Home, released on Yep Rock Records. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of Beach Blanket Fort Bingo, and remember to like, comment, share, subscribe, and do anything you darn well feel like. Just make sure it feels good.
Beach Blanket, yeah, yeah. Fort Bingo, yeah, yeah. Beach Blanket Fort Bingo Podcast. Beach Blanket, yeah, yeah. Fort Bingo, yeah, yeah. Beach Blanket Fort Bingo Podcast.
When the Rubinoos released their debut album in 1977, it was a breath of fresh air in a sea of snarling punk bands. Instead of moaning on and on about things that they hated, the Rubinoos embraced and sang about the things that they loved. Mixing bubblegum pop with rock and roll and adding a few slices of soul, the Rubinoos' music was a celebration of everything that had come before and an optimistic view of what was to be. Now, singer-guitarist John Rubin, guitarist, songwriter, vocalist Tommy Dunbar, drummer Don Spint, and bassist Royce Ader follow that album with the even better Back to the Drawing Board in 1979. By 1980, Royce had left the Rubinoos, replaced by Al Chan. While not as prolific as fans would like them to be, this lineup has continued off and on for nearly 40 years. Since 1998, the Rubinoos have released an album every 3 to 5 years, constantly amazing fans and critics with their ability to keep things fresh and exciting while sticking to the classic Rubinoos formula. And that formula includes great songwriting, heavenly harmonies, and a pure joy for making music. Now, in 2019, the Rubinoos have released From Home, an album produced by longtime friend, fan, and songwriting partner Chuck Prophet. While the band has been remarkably consistent in their recorded output over the years, From Home is their finest album since Back to the Drawing Board some 40 years ago. And that is really saying something if you're familiar with their impressive run of albums over the years. I recently had the opportunity to chat with John Rubin and Tommy Dunbar about this latest album and so much more. I hope you enjoy the highlights of our conversation.
I want to tell you a story.
The Blanket Fort, gentlemen. Can you introduce yourselves so that the listeners will be familiar with your voices? John?
Hi, this is John.
Well done.
I think my voice sounds just like Tommy, so I think you're going to have a big, big problem.
Well, just pretend we're the, what was that movie where the Ray Milland and Rosie Greer had his head?
Now, was that Incredible Two-Headed Transplant, or
wasn't it The Thing with Two Heads?
Thing with Two Heads, yeah.
That was... My dad took my brother and I to see that at the theater when it first came out.
You know, man, you're lucky.
Yeah, what'd your mom think about that?
My mom probably didn't know. She probably thought we were going to go see like a re-release of Sound of Music or something.
Right, right. Oh, my God.
Oh, no. No, we saw Willard and we saw, you know,
Willard, right.
The Grave.
Blackula, you know, Willard. Kind of... Oh, man, those are all the great movies of that period.
Now, was Ben actually a separate movie from Willard?
Ben was a sequel to Willard.
Oh, okay. The son of Willard.
Peekaboo. I'm watching you.
This is the first time in a long while that you've worked with a high-profile label in the U.S. You're obviously working with Yep Rock. Were you shopping for a deal, or did it all come together through happenstance?
John?
I think we got two words for that. Chuck Prophet.
Chuck Prophet.
That's it.
Chuck completely put that deal together. I mean, we didn't really know of the Yep label, and I don't think they really knew of us. So
he apparently had been bugging them about us for 2 years. And finally, you know, he was trying to convince them, oh, well, they got these great first two albums. You should do a reissue, you know, do a box set like you did with Eggs Over Easy and blah, blah, blah. And they're thinking about that. And then it kind of morphed into, well, you know, we've got new material and I think you should really make a record with these guys. And, you know, so we ended up talking to them for about, oh, gosh, probably about 8 or 9 months before we made the deal. And,
but yeah, we were not shopping like I said, for a deal. I mean, we were not expecting.
No, not at all.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, Chuck was relentless, though. I mean, really, relentless.
Yeah. Well, how did the relationship with Chuck start?
Well, you know, we knew him as a kid back in Berkeley. I mean, I remember seeing him in, like, Subway Guitars hanging out, and he played in a band called Bad Attitude. So, you know, we kind of knew, but he was, what, like 5 years younger than us or something, or whatever he is.
More.
Still is.
Yeah, even more. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's even younger than us now?
Yes, he's younger than that now. He's younger than that now.
Exactly. Exactly. But I went to, actually back up to Gary Phillips, who produced our first couple albums, was sending me, every once in a while, he'd send me a CD just of, you know, his favorite stuff he'd been listening to. And I remember him sending a couple of Chuck songs, and I just heard him and went, wow, that's that kid from, you know, and the songs were really good and the guitar playing was great and the singing and everything. And I went to see Chuck play and, you know, we talked afterwards and we said, oh man, we should write together sometime or, you know, and then I went to see him play again about a year later and we're talking, oh man, yeah, we should get together and write sometime. And then, you know, a year later, went to see him play again. And then finally, he calls me up and goes, okay, we got to put a date on the books. And it's like, oh, man, well, you know, you're all the way in San Francisco. I'm in Sacramento. But, yeah, we got to get a date on the books. Okay. And so I drove out to his place in San Francisco and, you know, not knowing what to expect. But we wrote two songs the first day. And then, you know, it was like, well, that was really cool. And so the next day he calls, okay, we got to get another day on the books. Okay. And then, so a couple of weeks later, he drove up here to Sacramento and we wrote another two songs and that just kept going on. And so basically that's kind of how the writing started. And out of that grew the idea of we should make an album because it just seemed like the thing to do.
I think for me, you know, Chuck and I barely knew him in Berkeley. And then over the years, we kind of ran into each other in L.A. and just different things, you know, hi, how you doing, blah, blah, blah. But I would say really didn't get to know Chuck well until we did this project. I mean, I think the fact that he made the deal happen was a lot of the impetus for us to trust him to produce the record, too. I mean, you know, it's like he delivered on, you know, he delivered
in
spades.
He's like the most proactive person just about I've ever met, you know?
Yeah, he's not one to let sleeping dogs lie.
Right.
That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Take me to the doctor, the emergency room.
Pretty confident that Yep Rock was going to allow you to make a Reuben News album rather than encourage you to change direction in some way?
Yeah, I don't think they were interested in the least in trying to get us to do something different. I don't think that was, I mean, like,
well, we
you know,
didn't
I mean,
think
the
they
whole,
were paying attention at
yeah.
first.
And,
I
mean,
didn't
it's,
know what to expect.
You know, I mean, they're really have been a great company to work with. It's really interesting. You know, it's been so long since we've had any,
really
any kind of
at all,
dealings.
It wasn't just, you know.
Yeah, any kind of dealings with a major or even a minor at this point for many, many years. So, you know, we didn't really know what to expect. And our last experiences with Warner Brothers and Epic were less than stellar. So, it wasn't like we were going, oh, wow, we're so excited to be signed to a label. But on the contrary, you know, as soon as these guys got involved, I mean, they have been just really, really supportive and really attentive, which is mind-blowing, actually.
Yeah, yeah, it's been kind of amazing.
Well, the album has a warm and spacious feel to it, although it does retain the classic Rubinoux sound. Did Chuck encourage the band to play a little looser on the album?
Play looser? I don't know. I mean, the one thing that's really different is that we rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed. So, you know, that just made it feel a lot different to walk into the studio. And I think Chuck had this in mind, that it would be similar to when we did our first couple albums, which is that we were a really rehearsed band. You know, and it's kind of like, well, stick a microphone in front of it. It's ready, you know. And I suppose that accounts for that, because, you know, when you've really got the songs down, then you're going way more for, okay, did that feel good, as opposed to, did we get that right? You know what I mean?
I think Chuck definitely, though, did have a, you know, his attitude is definitely a little more relaxed than ours. You know, as particularly as far as precision, you know, it's like,
right,
sometimes we get, you know, way into, you know, fly dentistry, and
right,
and he is definitely not that. And I'm not saying, you know, he accepts things that are foul or anything. He's just, I think, a lot more concerned with the feel than he is
right
precision. And
yep.
And for us, that's probably a very good influence. Otherwise, we could get, you know, we could spend weeks stressing over some part, you know.
Right.
It's not exactly perfect, you know.
Yeah. Well, one thing also that, I mean, John is playing rhythm guitar on this whole record, which is a lot different, you know, really playing as a band. And the other thing he asked me to do was to play solos while we were cutting the track, which I've never done before. And I thought that was really interesting, you know, and goosed me to, you know, it's a different feel, like, okay, here it comes, better do it right. You've sort of got one try, in a way. I mean, of course you can punch if you have to, but, you know, it's just a different feeling than, say, playing rhythm through the whole tune and then doing a solo, say, as an overdub, you know. It's also interesting when the rhythm guitar actually drops out for the solo or the second rhythm. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna capture
album is, you know, we did it at Hyde Street, which is, you know, a real studio.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to get to just go back to what Tom was saying about the preparation that went into it. And one of the things Chuck was kept harping on about continuously was, you got to get back to those first two albums. You got to get back to those first two albums, what you were doing. Now, I think he thought about it much differently than we did. I think he was really referring to the sentiment and the feeling and the enthusiasm that were embodied in those performances. But for me, and I think for Tommy as well, what really got us back to that is what Tommy was talking about before, is rehearsing and rehearsing and rehearsing and rehearsing. So we actually entered the studio completely ready to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, and that's why we were able to cut this record in such a short period of time. And it allowed us to use a better studio because we spent less money, because we spent less time, period. We spent our time in the rehearsal studio as opposed to the studio.
Right, right. Yeah, that kind of can't be overstated. I mean, it's such a, yeah.
I mean, it really reminds me of a really assholeish thing I said once. We were in England back in 1978, and we were playing with a band called the Smirks, who was another band on Berserkly. And I really, you know, I didn't really understand what a dick I was being when I said this, but I go up to those guys and I said, you know, have you guys thought about rehearsing more? I remember that. But you know what I realize is we were so into that ourselves. You know what I mean? It just seemed like that was the way things should be done. You know, we get together and we would play 5 days a week and get ready for our gigs or get ready to do whatever we were doing. And we work on songs daily, 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 daily. And it really, yeah, it changes the relationship you have with the people you're playing with, you know, in a really positive way.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see my bad luck charm? Keep it here right by my heart. Oh, no, nowhere to be found. Since you came and brought me back around, and I'm pretty close to something that could be good.
You guys have been working together for almost 50 years, and From Home, I feel, is the best full album since Back to the Drawing Board. I wish more bands had the energy and the enthusiasm and the joy of making music like you guys.
Well, thanks.
Well, you know, yeah, thank you. And I think a lot of it, Steve, has to do with the songwriting, honestly. Tommy and Chuck really kicked serious ass on this. You know, and I think over the years, the songwriting has been continuously strong. Tommy is just a great writer. And it has always kept the level of what we were doing high. And I'm not saying that I think every record we made was great, that every song we did was great, but there is a consistency of really excellent songwriting. And I really feel that has been what has allowed us to keep what you're talking about, the enthusiasm, the energy, all that stuff, because it's not, we're not presented with a lot of B material, and that just makes it super fun.
Well, I tell you, the difference between doing this and 45, you know, the previous CD, is the 45 we recorded all here just in my basement, and it was very piecemeal. And man, I mean, these two albums are kind of the like polar opposites of each other in terms of the way they were done. And my feeling is I never want to go back to doing stuff piecemeal again, if we can help it. I mean, it was so much more fun to record this album, you know, and again, I mean,
total pleasure,
to Chuck,
whole
know?
Time.
Yeah. Yeah. A total pleasure. And just, you know, because rehearsing is the funnest thing in the world. You know, our main problem is getting down to playing, because, you know, it's always like we haven't seen each other in a while. And yak, 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 yak. You know, okay, okay, let's get back to, let's try the song. And so anyway, yak, 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 yak. You know, but
yeah, I mean, you know, and
we get it done.
It's,
you know,
part of the, you know, the way we are. And, you know, we're always laughing and just, you know, it's always a crack up to play. And rehearsing, you know, I know a lot of musicians who really find rehearsing to be a burden. And I mean, I can understand that if you're not really having a great time, I guess.
Right.
You know, it could be a drag. But for me, anyway, and I think I speak for the rest of the guys, every time we get together, we just have a ton of fun. You know, it's like,
yeah,
getting together with your best friends and just hanging out and doing something that you really love to do.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know, I for any young musicians out there, I really recommend rehearsal.
yeah, no kidding. Well, and that's the other thing is walking into the studio when there's no what's my part, you know, where you can just get around one microphone and go, okay, we all know what our parts are. Let's just, you know, concentrate. Are you hearing all the parts equally in the control room there? Okay, great, let's go. You know, that's so different than, you know, sometimes even recording parts separately because you can't get everybody into the room at the same time. You know, it's a way different experience.
You got your Charlies and your Ringos, got your jazz guys with their bongos.
Did you guys already have sort of a certain style in mind for each of the tracks, you know, in terms of, you know, let's say, for example, like Rocking in Spain is this really glammy track, or Do You Remember is this really garage rocky sound. Is that what you had in mind when you wrote it, or did it organically evolve as you rehearsed it?
I mean, I think there's certain elements in a song that lend themselves to being done a certain way, but I don't think there's any preconceived. I mean, certainly it wasn't like, let's sit down and write a glammy song. You know what I mean? It's more like you're writing a song, it kind of goes where it's going to go. You try things and okay, that feels good. You know, that feels like a fun chorus to sing. You know, and then I think, and then you think stylistically almost as an afterthought. You know what I mean? I mean, there's certain things that you know. You know, like there's a song called Do I Love You on there that's got, you know, kind of an R&B guitar hook. So it that certainly suggests itself, I think, to everybody in an unspoken way because, you know, it does draw from those things. But it's not like you're going, okay, we have to examine these records because this is what this has to be. It's more like, you know, you start working out the vocals and things and see where it goes. I mean, I think the songs kind of take on a life of their own when you start playing them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, once again, it kind of gets back to that thing. The more you play them, songs kind of find themselves. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And exactly. And it's yeah. One of the... I actually, when you talk about 45 and From Home, 45... I actually really like that record. I think Tommy wrote some incredibly great songs that are on that record. But that record is good in spite of the process. From Home is great because of the process. I mean, that's kind of how I feel about it. You know, it really, that what you're talking about is exactly part of that process. We got to play those songs so much before we got in the studio that we were able to find them.
I've just been finding myself really hungry for, you know, like, say I'm checking out YouTube late at night or whatever. I'm really hungry to hear and see videos and stuff of music that where I know they played at the same time. You know, because records, as Chuck says, it's easy to get cynical about the process these days, you know, because you listen to stuff on the radio and it feels like everything is done really piecemeal. And all kinds of stuff is tuned, and, you know, it can be really perfect, but you go back to, like, a record recorded live, like, in the 50s or something, you know, and you just know that that's actually going on in a room. This was an actual event, you know. The guy doing the vocal actually was stepping up to a microphone, and that's what he sounded like. You know, like an Elvis record, I mean... That's what he sounded like when he stepped up to the mic, as opposed to
Frank Sinatra. Know. I mean, you know,
Frank and the orchestra.
You know, I mean, it's kind of amazing. Or for that matter, Dionne Warwick. You know,
right?
I mean, she Eric cut Burton. All those Burt Bacharach early stuff was cut live and amazing.
Yeah. Heart for sale, nothing but highway miles. Once you get behind. Gonna feel it come alive. Never mind.
John is the main lead vocalist. How do you decide, okay, which song Tommy's going to sing or which part Al's going to sing? Is that just worked out and you all sort of have an agreement on what's going to happen?
Well, I think usually the default is that John is going to sing it. And sometimes, you know, then there are tunes where, you know, we might sing it together. Or there's, you know, if it's a two-part harmony kind of song, then a lot of times it'll be me and John. But, you know, usually John is the default. And, you know, there are times when I'll take a lead vocal because it's lower and it's harder for John to, you know, like, in other words, if the range is, like, huge and he's having to go really high, say, in the chorus, I might take the A section in the verse, you know.
Yeah, and, but, I mean, we're fortunate enough, I think, to have Al, who, you know, is a great singer and you know, can also sing kind of in my range. I'm telling you, you know, having Al in the band has made my life so much easier, because a lot of times I can give him parts that were killing me. You know, like I'd have to sing a hard verse and then I'd have to take the high part in the chorus. And now Al can sing it and I get a break. It's fantastic. You know, but I what I was going to say is, you know, the Tommy does our vocal arranging, and which I will give another kudo to him. I think one of the other reasons the Rubenese vocals sound really good, besides everybody sings well, is the arrangements are really good. I mean, Tom has a really great sense of arranging, and I think, and I'll speak for him here just to say, I think we got very influenced by, you know, doo-wop and the Beach Boys and obviously the Beatles, but, you know, for the four-part stuff, you know, the doo-wop stuff, the soul stuff, and the Beach Boys stuff really had a huge influence on Tommy's arranging style and sort of came up with this thing that is very much, I don't want to say fully unique, but it's very characteristic of the Rubenews, and I love that, you know?
Well, not to mention Dono, really, like, putting Don's falsetto in really gives it a character that's different than, say, when John and I are just, you know, layering vocals, the two of us or something. I mean, it's the four guys singing together. I mean, and again, yeah, because Al's voice is just great. The other thing is that, you know, four people singing is just so much different than one guy four times. She's a hurricane in your face. All my eyes tell me tidy hers. Miss alternate universe. Miss alternate universe. All the animals, animals.
If you look at it, the Rubenews are a rarity because you've got four vocalists, you know, three on the front line, and each of you could sing a couple songs per show or per album, but most bands now, they just focus on one singer and maybe a backing vocalist. It seems like, you know, you guys and you know, maybe even the Eagles and Shoes and stuff, they were doing it, but bands really don't do that anymore.
It's not very modern style. You know, the sort of a big vocal thing is not a big modern style at this point. I sing in an a cappella group called the Mighty Echoes, and one of the things that I've really taken away from doing that gig for all these years, people really relate to singing very, very easily.
Mm-hmm.
A guitar, a loud guitar, a loud drums, or can really set up a barrier between you and your audience. And I think one of the reasons we draw people in is because we do sing, and we sing a lot, and there's a lot of vocals, and there's something about that. You know, I mean, because everybody sings. I don't care who you are, everybody sings. And it's very primal. And so I think that's one of the reasons that we are relatable easily. And also, you know, the fact that we do it well is impressive. Because as you said, not a lot of people are trying to do that nowadays. I mean, certainly I see bands that have amazing singers and do amazing singing. I mean, I'm not saying there's nobody doing it or we're the only ones or anything. But it is something I think that draws people in, and I think vocals in general draw people in, and they it's more intimate or something. I don't know exactly the right description, but I do think that is a really big deal.
Do I love you? Do I love you? Do I love you, baby? Yes, I do. And I hope you love me too. Yes, I do. Put down the book, take off your glasses.
What inspired the album's title?
You know the song From Home by the Troggs? Well, that was one of the, I don't know, what would you call it, John? It was the first song that we did when we were doing all covers. We were like an oldies band for the first, I don't know, few months. And that song was the one where, you know, we turned up loud and, you know, I'd get on my back and kick my legs and John was just screaming his guts out. And it's just always been an important song to us. And so really the album is named after that song.
You know, it also, I mean, you know, the other thing is because it's back sort of to our roots from
right,
our hometown.
Right.
You know, that
sort
was the
of a
other
double,
side of the
double
meaning.
Entendre.
Double entendre. Yeah, I love that song From Home. You know, Reg.
Had that.
Sounds like Bela Lugosi.
Oh,
yeah, God, I got that 45 in a pile. I got that 45 in a pile. You know, it was what else was in that? It was like Steam, Na Na Hey Hey, Kiss It Goodbye, From Home, and
no, was that the same time you
the
got
rapper, and Phil and the Frantics.
That was a fine.
Say That You Will. Yeah,
Say
I mean, it was.
Will.
I got this. I don't know who gave me the stack of 45s, but man, that was a great
well,
find.
You told me something about somebody was asking you to carry boxes of records somewhere.
Ah, yeah.
And they said you can take a handful.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Did it ring a bell?
I just remember somebody just giving them to me, and From Home was in there. And like I said, I love Reg's Bela Lugosi vocal.
Yeah. Well, actually, Peter Lorre.
You love. Peter Lorre. I'm sorry. Not Bela Lugosi. Peter Lorre.
Yeah. You're thinking of Monster Mash.
No, that's Boris Karloff.
Okay. We're getting off. Al would be so pissed right now.
Oh, God. Yeah. Because Al knows every monster movie.
Getting all the monsters wrong. Oh, boy. He'd be pissed.
Peekaboo. Watching you.
I do want to give a shout out to the guys, by the way. You know, we were talking about, you know, you were saying, you know, the band is getting better and better. Well, I have to say on this album, I really think Don and Al just shine on this record. They did a really great job as a rhythm section. I mean, vocals, you know, they're always great, but they really stepped up this time, you know.
That's what happens when you get to rehearse. You know, like I bet if we asked them, they'd rather play in the studio on something they know. You know what I mean? Then, yeah.
This album was cut without a click.
Yeah, that's
we haven't done that.
Another difference. And basically without headphones also. It's the first time not using headphones. Well, I mean, when we're doing the vocals, we were just doing them two tracks, you know, being played over the speakers in the room. Well, that's something John wanted to do because, right? I mean, and actually you started doing that on 45 even because headphones are just like, you know, weird and kind of alien. They're not how you usually...
They also change, you know, and this is not some apocryphal nonsense. They change the apparent pitch. You know, and that makes it really hard to sing in tune, you know, and I sing in tune. I'm a pretty well in tune singer. And I started doing vocals with speakers and it's just so much easier.
Yeah.
You know, cause in a way you feel what I feel like when I have headphones on, I'm actually having to, okay, well, I'm perceiving the pitch at like 442 instead of 440.
Right,
and now I have to adjust my vocal to that, even though I'm not quite really hearing that.
It
you
also,
know?
I don't know about you, but for me, it does something weird to the tone also. I mean, it's like you're having to hear yourself you know, not the way you're used to just hearing yourself through your head.
Yeah, absolutely.
Coming through these things that, I mean, it can be done, and like when the mix is really right, that can be okay. But just singing in the room, especially when we're singing together, I'm used to hearing you guys next to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very different. Yeah. So, again, for all you young bands out there, give it a try. You know, it's,
yeah,
it's
I mean,
a different
it's,
thing.
The way we approached this was just very much be prepared.
January, you come and then you go.
So far, there's been three tracks or three videos that have been released. You know, Do You Remember, Honey from the Honeycombs, and Phaedra. Now, do you guys have control over that? I mean, you know, do you pick the songs that are going to be released as quote-unquote singles, or at least, you know, video radio tracks, or do you leave that up to the label?
Pretty much that's been up to the label. I mean, I don't know that we wouldn't have any input, but... I don't remember trying to.
Yeah, I mean, they suggest a song, and you know, okay, that sounds good. You know,
yeah.
I mean,
I've
agreed with their choices. I mean, I think they were all correct.
You know, as fans, we all feel incredibly lucky when there's a new Reuben News album. Once an album is released, do you immediately start thinking about the next one, or do you just sort of wait to see what happens, and it'll come when it comes?
The latter. Yeah. I mean, right now we're just thinking about going out and playing, really. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, we feel so lucky when Reuben News album comes out.
Yeah. I mean,
you find a four-piece band rocking hard, raising the heat.
Reuben News are often referred to as a power pop band. However, the genre itself seems to spark constant debates online, and many artists associated with power pop try to distance themselves from the term. Now, how do you feel about the term power pop and often being referred to as one of the greatest, if not the greatest, power pop bands of all time?
Well,
I don't care.
And I'll say this honestly, I really always have thought we're a pop band, pretty straight ahead pop band. We, you know, have done records with a lot of keyboards. We've done records without keyboards. We, you know, in general, we're a guitar oriented pop band with a lot of singing. If that's power pop, that's then, hey, I'm proud to be one of, if not the greatest, in that genre, you know, that makes me proud. I feel good about that. I don't really have a problem with the term itself. I just don't know quite what it means exactly. You know, that's
right.
You know,
right,
is it the Raspberries? Is it the Who? Is it Dwight Twilley? Is it Cheap Trick? Is it, because all those bands I just named could be in other genres. That's the
thing that seems, you know, a little, if anything, silly to me is that all music and any style is sort of a continuum. It's not some, you know, thing that's got defined edges. Oh, if it goes outside that, it's not this, you know. So, sure, things have recognizable stylistic characteristics and, you know, but... Do I mind being, hey, if someone wants to call us that, that's fine by me.
We are kind of in a genre that's like a 60s-ish pop band, right?
Right.
I mean, that's
right.
Kind of what we are. We're a 60s-ish pop band. And I like to think we're one of the better ones. That makes me very happy in that I think we're close in the top half of that genre. That would make me really happy and really proud.
Where can listeners learn more about the Rubinoos online?
Facebook certainly is a very good place to start.
The Rubinoos Facebook page. Also, Pop Plus One is a good store to acquire past Rubinoos catalog. That is definitely a good place to go for that.
Well, you know, actually, we've been thinking about doing, you know, since when we get together, we've got so many stories, you know, it's like 50 years worth of stories that, you know how it is, you get together with your old friends and you just start, you remember the time that whatever. We're starting to put some of those, you know, actually in writing. So we may start putting them up on our website, you know, just rubinoos.com. We were thinking about doing that, you know, making little, just, you know, like, well, remember the time that the, you know, they tried to, carve a totem pole for our second album cover and got stolen next to the pool, you know, putting things like that in writing. And so there may be more, if we can get that together, there may be more at our website. Right now it's kind of blank, but you know, there's just a few things up there.
Yeah. But we're in the midst of revamping the website. So hopefully that will accelerate.
Well, that's it for this episode of Beach Blanket Fort Bingo. I'd like to thank John and Tommy from the Rubinoos for stopping by and chatting about their brand new album, From Home, available on Yep Rock Records. I'd like to dedicate this episode to John, Tommy, Don Spint, and Al Chan. That's right, the Rubinoos. And I'd also like to dedicate this episode to all of you who love good music. Because remember, we're all in this thing together. We'll see you next time on Beach Blanket Fort Bingo.
Peekaboo, I'm watching you.